I have planted trees or been a part of planting trees all around the world, getting my hands dirty, and I keep a list of places I planted. I love to drive back by those places to see them when I can. But you're right, to have a career where you're really transforming a community. You're transforming a community, and it's a really cool legacy to look back on.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Internet of Nature podcast, a place to explore the emerging technologies and the practitioners that are building greener, healthier, and smarter communities. I'm your host, Nadine Khalla. In this season of the Internet of Nature podcast, we explore the future of urban forestry together with Planet Geo, a pioneering urban forest software and consulting company. I partnered with Planet Geo this season because they are at the forefront of trees and technology, helping communities around the world map a greener future. Together, we've chosen 9 key topics facing the future of urban forestry. In today's episode, episode 2, we wanted to dive into the world's best urban forests. The methods used in these urban forests provide a blueprint for cities aiming to reduce urban warming by planting trees, manage wildlife populations, preserve cultural value, and protect biodiversity. So, what can we learn from the most successful examples around the world? The cities that have already done it, what can we learn from them? To help me uncover this, today's guest is Dan Lam, the president and CEO of the Arbor Day Foundation, the largest nonprofit membership organization dedicated to planting trees. In his role, Dan is responsible for the overall strategic direction of the organization and advancing its mission to inspire people to plant, nurture, and celebrate trees. Dan has also traveled the world extensively, visiting some of the world's most exciting and innovative examples of urban forestry, many of which we'll discuss today. Under Dan's leadership, the Arbor Day Foundation has undergone remarkable growth through the development of programs and partnerships that have helped plant more than 500 million trees in the last 50 years around the world. But that wasn't enough. To celebrate their 50th anniversary, the Arbor Day Foundation is planting another 500 million trees in 5 years in neighborhoods and forests of greatest need. As you might remember, I talked to Ben Wilinski, the Director of Partnerships and Innovation at the Arbor Day Foundation, in Season 4, Episode 2. So if you're eager to learn more about how exactly the foundation is doing this, I encourage you to check out my episode with Ben. Dan is a trusted thought leader in the sustainable urban forestry space, and he regularly speaks at conferences hosted throughout the United States, Sustainable Brands, the U.S. Chamber of Conference, and other high-profile industry events. U.S. Chamber of Commerce, not conference. Dan is also frequently used as a resource to top news outlet organizations and is often featured on the Weather Channel, CNN, Forbes, Fast Company, NPR, and is most recently the author of Now is the Time for Trees. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Dan as we learn about what we can learn from the most successful urban forests around the world. Hi, Dan. Welcome to the Internet of Nature podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be with you.
Great to have you on. So before we kick off into what we can learn about and from the world's best urban forests, who is Dan and how did he get involved in trees and forestry?
Well, so I have been with the Arbor Day Foundation for the last 18 years, planting trees and trying to inspire tree planters, but my entire career has been in nonprofit work, helping to advance people, communities, conservation, and ended up coming to the Arbor Day Foundation about 18 years ago. But I give credit to my parents who instilled that tree planter ethic into me and my brothers and sisters, getting us outdoors every chance they could to plant trees, to be a part of nature. And no one was more excited than my mother when I decided to take a job with the Arbor Day Foundation 18 years ago, because she's just so passionate about trees. She knows more about trees than I do, for sure. But I really give her a lot of credit and my father a lot of credit for instilling that ethic in me. And I'm proud to get to work at the Arbor Day Foundation and humbled to get to be the CEO of the Arbor Day Foundation and be a part of the work we do all around the world.
That's incredible. You mentioned brothers and sisters. So it sounds like you come from a big family.
I've got two brothers and one sister, and they're spread all over the country from Delaware to Puerto Vallarta. And yeah, it's a family that we are tree planters for sure and conservationists. Yeah.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska, which is where I'm speaking with you from today. I grew up in Lincoln, moved away right after college to Arizona for a while, California for a while. I was in Austin, Texas for 10 years, and then got a call from an old friend saying, hey, there's a job at the Arbor Day Foundation you'd be perfect for. And I said, Lincoln, Nebraska? Do I really want to move back to Lincoln, Nebraska? But it's been fantastic. My wife and I, we've got two kids here growing up here in Nebraska now. Mm. And of course, Nebraska is the home of Arbor Day, which surprises a lot of people, but it is the home of Arbor Day. 150 years ago, Arbor Day was founded in Nebraska, and it was founded here because they didn't have trees. There were no trees in Nebraska, and they needed trees for homes, for shelter, for nuts, for berries, for all kinds of the sustainable ecology reasons that we want trees today.
That's interesting. So it was really born out of this necessity for trees. And
absolutely,
150 years later, that's still very much the mission that drives Arbor Day and Arbor Day Foundation since.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people think that, for many years, people would think of Arbor Day as a celebration of the beauty of trees. And it is that they are beautiful. They're important. That's an important part of the benefits of trees. But more and more today, I think people see trees as a must-have, not just a nice-to-have, not just an ornamental piece of the community and our world, but really this necessary part of it. And you're right, 150 years ago when Arbor Day was started, it was because of necessity. People wanted the benefits that trees bring, and we're still pushing that message today.
Absolutely. And through all kinds of different media as well, because you also recently published a book. What brought you to write that?
Well, last year was our 50th anniversary. And so we thought one of the ways that might be fun to celebrate is by publishing a book. And we talked to a number of different publishers, and Timber Press jumped at the opportunity to publish our book called Now is the Time for Trees. Timber Press is a wonderful publisher that has experience in trees and nature and gardening. They were great to work with. I had a phenomenal co-author. If you're ever going to write a book, I recommend getting a co-author, Lorraine Faulkner Edwards out of Seattle. And we wrote a book that was about inspiring people to be a part of the tree planting movement today, celebrating trees, celebrating the importance of trees, but also information about how to plant, where to plant, what to plant, making sure if people are going to invest the time and invest the money in planting trees, that they have success and that those trees bring the benefits that they're looking for decades and decades to come.
So
it was a humbling experience writing a book, though, I'll tell you. It's a lot of work, but it has been a lot of fun seeing the positive reaction we've been getting from around the country and around the world.
No, I can relate. I've got my manuscript deadline in 2 months from now. So it's... It's a journey, that's for sure, or an emotional roller coaster, as I like to call it.
Well, congratulations. That's exciting.
Thank you. Yeah, I have the same. My only qualm about it is that you hand in your manuscript, then it takes so long, working with a publisher to then actually get it into the hands of people. But I guess we got to be patient.
Yeah. Well, I always tell my kids, writing is 25% writing, 75% editing.
Yeah.
And I think that's the truth. And and that's not just in the book, but it seems like all the work we do, we're always editing.
Absolutely. So you mentioned very clearly in the title of the book, Now is the Time for Trees. But why is it that we just mentioned 150 years ago, people needed trees, perhaps for different reasons. You mentioned things like shelter and building materials and those things at the time. Why is now the time for trees?
Well, anyone who picks up a newspaper or opens up a news app on their phone hears about the historic fires we've been experiencing around the United States and around the world. He reads about the increasing frequency and severity of natural disasters that are downing and damaging critical tree canopy. We read about the excessive temperatures that we are all experiencing everywhere that are taking a toll on people and on trees. And this list of challenges goes on and on and on. And that's why we say, if ever there was a time to be planting trees, now is that time. If ever there was this moment for the nature-based solutions that trees bring in cooling our cities, in calming and slowing heavy storms and rains to prevent floods and runoff, the need for biodiversity and ecosystem management, the health and wellness that trees and green space bring, the list goes on and on and on. But it is a critical time, not just to be planting trees, but to be managing forests, maintaining forests, and ensuring that we have those benefits that trees and forests are bringing to us.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned that so well, because I think that's a lot of what gets lost, even in campaigns like the Arbor Day Foundation that has going on right now, which is the mission to plant 500 million trees in the next 5 years to celebrate the 50th anniversary. A lot of that, when it gets picked up by the media, of course, is planting, 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 planting. And that's something that I know from previous discussions with Ben Walensky of season 4 in the podcast, that that is just one small part of what the Arbor Day Foundation wants to do. It's not just about planting, it's also about growing. And I think very importantly, perhaps the foundation, all of that inspiring people about the benefits and the need for trees. But despite all of that, what do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions still about trees and urban forestry?
No, I think urban forestry, first of all, is I think difficult for some people to understand. People intuitively know what forests are. They have a romantic notion of what a forest is. Even if they never go to a quote unquote forest, they understand that there are these treed places out in nature, out in rural parts of the globe that are important forests where animals and birds and all kinds of other good things happen. Oftentimes people don't think about the fact that they live in a forest. An urban forest, the trees where we live, work, and play. And it's just a really, really important forest. They're the hardest working trees out there. It's not an easy place to be a tree in a city, a town. And so people don't always probably appreciate just how much value that these trees are bringing to them every single day, whether it is cleaning their air and making their lives safer and healthier, whether it is shading their home and helping them turn their air conditioning units down on those hot, hot summer days, whether it is creating those peaceful places where they can walk and reflect and calm themselves, whether it is helping to prevent the floods and the storms, whether it is increasing their property values because trees do that. The list of the benefits that trees bring the list is so long, and I don't think people always appreciate both the economic value and the social wellness, health, and other benefits that urban forest, those trees in our cities and towns, bring to them. It's often just taken for granted, I think.
Right. How do you think we, other than going into a neighborhood and chopping down all the trees so that people can experience what it might be like to live in a place that has absolutely no trees and therefore maybe, you know, not take them for granted in the future, how do we show people how important they are?
It's a great question, and I wish I had a silver bullet answer, but I don't. But, you know, you're right. When those trees are gone, people freak out. We do a lot of tree planting and tree distributions in the wake of hurricanes and tornadoes. And when you see the passion and the emotion that people have and their excitement to bring trees and green and those natural landmarks back to their neighborhoods, it's really something else. But at the Arbor Day Foundation, what we try to do is communicate in unique and creative ways just how important those trees are. We work with cities, We work with college campuses, healthcare institutions, elementary schools to help them communicate to different audiences. There's a real value in trees in our neighborhoods, in our towns. And more and more people, I think, are recognizing it. But of course, it isn't just about the planting, as you said. It takes maintenance. It takes management, just like our gray infrastructure, our roads, our utility lines. Our trees are a really important part of our infrastructure also, and they take investment and management.
No, absolutely. I want to dive into a little bit of things that you've learned from some of the world's best urban forests or successful urban forests, whoever we might want to choose to define that. You've gotten the opportunity to travel to many different cities all over the world. What are some urban forests that have stuck out to you?
So you're right. I have had the fortunate opportunity to travel to a bunch of great urban forests around the world and see how cities and communities are managing those forests. And so I have some favorite urban forests? Boy, it's tough to beat some of those amazing green spaces, those parks, those iconic parks around the world, like Central Park, like Vondel Park in Amsterdam, like Griffith Park in Los Angeles, Hyde Park, those escapes around the world that are in these dense urban areas. But there are also just these neighborhoods that I've gotten to see, these small neighborhoods that could be almost anywhere, these neighborhoods in Southeast Asia where they're not just planting shade trees, they're planting fruit trees that are being harvested regularly. That's why these communities want those trees there. It's not because of the biodiversity. It's not because of the climate impact. It's because they want the fruit that those trees bear. My parents live in Henderson, Nevada, which is a desert community right outside of Las Vegas. And every time I go visit there, you know, the desert is beautiful in a lot of ways, but they need trees desperately. And there is a street through Henderson, Nevada called Paseo Verde. Green Pass, I think, is basically what it means in English. And it is the most delight of all the streets to drive down in Henderson, Nevada. It's the most wonderful because it's tree lined. It's green. It's unlike almost every other street in Henderson. And I remember talking to my mom about it one day as we were driving along. And I was like, this is my favorite street in town. And she says, my favorite street too. And I said, you know why? It's because of the trees. It's just a delightful drive as opposed to just the brick and mortar along most of those other streets. So there's the beautiful, iconic urban forests that show up in parks in cities and towns around the world, but also those neighborhoods and towns that have strategically planted trees to invite people to come outdoors, to invite people to connect as neighbors. Those are exciting examples of urban forests as well.
And when you've, can you provide any specific examples of those smaller projects that you've seen that, as you say, could be anywhere, which I think is a really positive thing because it gives this feeling of we can replicate this stuff. We can have this in many different places. And what do you think, in the case of a successful smaller project, what do you think the key factor was in that success?
So what I have found in any successful urban forestry program or project is, and it's not going to surprise you, there's a combination of community leadership, and that might be from the city, it might be from the neighbors in the neighborhood. There's a collaborative spirit. It's not one entity who is prescribing this is how things are going to get done, but there's a cross collaboration between the neighbors and the neighborhood and the city and the recognition of the importance of trees and communities. There's oftentimes also science and technology being brought into play to ensure that there's planning and management ready for years to come to ensure that those are sustainable urban forests. And so there are lots of examples of that. There's a great story down in Melbourne, Australia, which is one of the hottest places in the world. And they are emphasizing urban forestry like never before because of the excessive temperatures. but they've done things to try and engage the population through technology, through things like creating personalities for trees throughout their entire community. And they've invited their community to write love notes and love letters to trees around the city. And it was wildly popular. And certain trees got a tremendous amount of engagement. And so those cities, those neighborhoods, it doesn't work if people aren't bought in. So making sure that it's not just a city or somebody saying, gosh darn it, we're going to come in and plant trees because we know it's the right thing to do, but rather using technology, using science to tell a compelling story, making sure that the neighborhoods want the trees, understand what kinds of trees, and taking that kind of community approach, that's where it usually works best.
Yeah, what I love about that Melbourne example, I actually had Yvonne Lynch, who was the former urban forest, urban ecology manager for the city of Melbourne, who was instrumental in setting that up. And what I love about that project is that it wasn't set up as a citizen engagement project per se in the beginning. It was really meant to help them aid management of these individual trees, because basically Yvonne and her team would sit in the office and they would have dozens of emails and calls, and the first question they would always get is, they would ask is, well, what tree is it that you're talking about? And then you would get this rapport of, well, it's in front of this house, but it's not quite this address. And it was just highly frustrating for both parties involved. So that's where the idea came to provide these email addresses per individual tree based on their ID number. And then the community, first locally and then nationally in Australia and then internationally, you had trees from other cities that were emailing than these trees in Melbourne. It's miraculous. I keep telling Yvonne still, I was like, you've got to write a book about this, just about
that. Yeah, isn't it great? It's just that great example of just management, passion, relationships, technology, all of it working together to create something special.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, we've talked a little bit about some of your favorite urban forests, but what about some of your favorite ways or most useful ways that you've seen different technologies be used in urban forests around the world?
So today there is more sophisticated science and technology than ever before that communities, neighborhoods, cities can use to understand their urban forest resource and the value that it really is bringing to them. And so at the Arbor Day Foundation and the partners we work with, there's all kinds of mapping tools that we use and technology we use. There's important data layers that we're able to use to help guide us where we can have the greatest impact in growing tree canopy and getting trees in the ground. We've got partners like Nature Quant, which you, I think, have heard about, that does a wonderful job helping to bring.
I'm a scientific advisor for their team, actually.
And it's just amazing what they are able to do to help tell a compelling story about the health and science of trees. And then we also are really fortunate that programs like iTree that have been around for almost 19 years now, led by the U.S. Forest Service and other great partners like Davey Tree and others that help to tell that ecosystem service benefit story to motivate and incentivize. Then there's companies like Planet Geo who are just doing more and more cutting edge creation of tools that help cities understand how to plant, where to plant, what to plant. And we're lucky. We're lucky to have so many great partners around the country and the globe that are bringing technology to bear to do great things.
And how have you seen that play out for, is that a siren?
I don't know. Do you hear that noise?
It's a little bit. It's a siren or a doorbell. That's what it sounds like. Somewhere between those two.
There's somebody drilling on the balcony right outside my.
What it is.
Hold on a second.
Yeah, no worries.
Anything we can do about that? Sorry.
No worries.
I mean, if it's not too bad, we can keep going, but.
No, it's fine.
I don't know how long he's going to be there.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Okay.
We don't want to stop he or she okay. in his work day.
Okay.
They're probably doing something important. What were we talking about? Oh yeah. So absolutely, there's these massive trends in technologies getting adopted, you know, whether that's with municipalities, whether that's big nonprofits like yourselves. There's companies like Planet Geo out there that are innovating, and Nature Quant that are out there that are providing the map for where we might need to prioritize urban forestry and urban greening measures. Can you give me any specific examples of municipalities or perhaps even tree care companies that have used technology in an inspiring way in your eyes?
In an inspiring way. Yes. So again, we're really fortunate. There are some of the sharpest, smartest tree care companies around the world that are getting better and better at equipping cities and towns with resources and information to do good work. And I think one of the best ways it's done is by helping to connect people with those trees. Mm-hmm. So equipping people with apps like the MyTree app from iTree, which enables people to map individual trees that they've helped to plant. And there are other companies like Planet Geo and Davey and Bartlett and tree care companies that are trying to connect homeowners with their trees, not just as a landscaping value, but they're recognizing it as an investment in their property, an investment in their neighborhood, using multiple tools to tell that compelling story.
Right. I think that's such an important thing that I often in the conversation about technology gets forgotten, because it is very much seen as this lens through, well, what are the best tools that we can use for monitoring and management? And don't get me wrong, those are very important, but there's this whole other side. And that's the one I'm really excited about exploring more with Internet of Nature in the future as well, is about how can we use technology to actually restore that relationship with nature. And it's a controversial one, because people do not like to see nature and technology in the same sentence when it comes to achieving that goal. But as we see with the example from Melbourne, it can have beautiful, beautiful outcomes.
Absolutely. Undoubtedly, and more today, my sense is people are more and more comfortable using apps, using their phones, using technology as a pathway to information. And hopefully we can continue to grow that comfort in understanding that trees are just so important. And technology is a great conduit to helping people understand the multiple values.
Hey everybody, thanks again to this season's sponsor, Planet Geo. Planet Geo has a suite of software and services all designed to shift the urban forestry conversation from hypothetical to reality. See the link in the show notes to learn more. And now, back to the show.
As we mentioned, so Arbor Day Foundation has this massive goal of planting 500 million trees in the next 5 years to celebrate the 50th anniversary, 500. And what do the next 5 years look like for Arbor Day Foundation? How are you going to make that a reality?
So as a part of our 50th anniversary, as you're saying, we committed in our first 50 years, we planted almost 500 million trees in forests and neighborhoods. And as we've looked at what kind of role we can play in this moment of climate crisis and the need for trees, we've pushed ourselves to say, how can we help plant another 500 million trees in the next 5 years? But it isn't just about planting. It's also about focus. Our two guiding principles are focus and scale. We don't want to plant just anywhere. We want to be planting as much as we can in neighborhoods, communities, and forests of greatest need. And so that's what we're really leaning into. And so we are tapping new partner networks. We're working with our long historic partners like state forestry agencies, cities, government, other government and non-government organizations. We've got a long list of corporate and private sector partners who share our passion for the impact focus can bring to this kind of plant-in initiative. And so we're stretching ourselves like never before to see how can we help nursery supply? How can we help other supply chain? How are we helping to boost and inspire a workforce to be able to get this kind of work done? How can we be tapping into the opportunities around verified forestry carbon offsets to monetize tree planting, helping indigenous communities and forests in developing countries grow and thrive and sustain? It's not going to be easy. We're not sure how we're going to get to 500 million. And we may not get all the way to 500 million. We may only get to 450 million. But the reality is we want to be a part of helping to push this movement forward with aspiration around impact. And we know that with our members, with our partners, that we can do great work and measure the impact of these trees. And that's, it's important. It's exciting. And the Arbor Day Foundation, we are optimistic that we're going to be able to get this done.
I feel that way too. I'm also optimistic, but I have to ask, we have this huge movement in urban forestry. I mean, I think it's a movement that we've never, ever seen a time like it. I mean, we've got this new $1.5 billion federal investment going into urban forestry programs. I feel like the mainstream media is with us. We've got celebrities that are on board that are talking about how important it is to have trees in communities. So it's definitely, it's having a big golden moment, absolutely. But what would you say if I asked, what is the thing that still keeps you up at night regarding the urban forestry movement?
Well, I would say it's getting it done right. Mm. You know, what we don't want to do is have a situation where we get collectively, not just the Arbor Day Foundation, but our community, our shared community, where we get millions of trees in the ground that don't survive.
Right.
Like the most important thing is for our credibility's sake, for the movement's sake, for the sustainability of our community, the resiliency of our communities, is that those trees survive and thrive, not just that they get in the ground. And so that's the really important thing, is making sure that we're doing it using science and technology, building authentic relationships so that when we're planting in neighborhoods of need, that those neighborhoods embrace and want those trees and will help them survive for years to come. But that's, I think, one of our biggest challenges, making sure that it's done the right way. It is about planting. We need to be planting, but it's about management. It's about maintenance. It's about prioritization of where those trees go. And it can be done. We have the science. We have the technology. We've got the know-how. Fortunately, now we've got resources like we've never had before. And so it's time to deliver. And we can do it. And it's exciting. And I think this community is ready to be bold and figure out the pathway forward.
On that note, one of the most innovative examples that I've seen in the urban forestry world, when we talk about this idea of doing it right and how technology might be able to support that, is having municipalities no longer set their goals and mandates around the number of stems that they put into the ground, so the number of trees that they want to plant, but instead framing their goals around an increase in crown volume. So not necessarily even canopy cover, but crown volume specifically. And they're using terrestrial LIDAR for this. So LIDAR that you would measure not from an aerial, but from a car with a sensor on it. That's the same technology that a self-driving car would use to make sure it doesn't run into anything or anyone. That technology is being used to give an objective measurement, a digital twin almost, of the trees in a street view area, or you could put the scanner on a backpack if you did it in a park. And what I really like about that is you're completely changing the narrative, right? Because you're incentivizing something that has never been incentivized before. We've always incentivized and had political ambitions, and even the Arbor Day Foundation goal of planting 500 million trees is around putting a number of stems into the ground. So what do you think about something like that? And could you imagine that that's an approach that Arbor Day Foundation might want to take in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things about the Arbor Day Foundation, you will almost never hear us saying, here's how you should do it.
Hmm.
We help to advise. When great lessons like that are coming out, we love to convene and connect the community leaders to learn from each other and share with each other. But if we go into a community like Atlanta, or we go into a community like Boise or Los Angeles or London or Sao Paulo, wherever it might be, we lean on local leaders to help understand where to plant, what to plant, why to plant. We're not going to parachute in from Lincoln, Nebraska to say, here's what you should do. And what you just described in that new technology, if that's how that community thinks they can be making an advancement for their community, then that's how we want to support. That's what we want to support. We would never want to prescribe this is the way it should be done, because every city's different. The relationships, the hardiness zones, there's just so much different in every community. And you know, that what you described is such an exciting new concept, and we're going to learn from it. And we need to be testing those new styles, those new technologies, to see how we're making the biggest difference. So the Arbor Day Foundation will be excited about that. To us, we see that as a complement to our work and our goals, not a conflict.
I think that's actually a good introduction to something else that I wanted to ask you. I think a common misconception that people have about the Arbor Day Foundation is that it's an organization that collects the big bucks from the big corporations and other big donors, and then just drives into communities with, you know, the trees in the back of the pickup truck and says, here you go, good luck. And I think it would be good to allow you the opportunity to set the record straight about what the Arbor Day Foundation actually does and how it actually works deeply Sure. with local communities and organizations, because I don't think enough people know that.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you, I've had a lot of people over the years tell me, oh, hey, I got a tree from you guys when I was in fifth grade or third grade or something like that.
Right.
And the reality is, they didn't. You know, the Arbor Day Foundation, we don't do a lot of that. Maybe in Lincoln sometimes, but I usually just say, you're welcome, and go on to the next conversation. So we get credit for a lot of trees that that we don't actually distribute. And sometimes those trees, you know, you pass them out to school kids, and they can end up in a lot of trash cans or a lot of backpacks for weeks and weeks and weeks. But the Arbor Day Foundation, our mission is we inspire people to plant, nurture, and celebrate trees. We do it all kinds of different ways. We send our members little baby seedling trees all around the country. Many of those trees survive. Many trees don't. Sometimes they plant them upside down. Sometimes they plant them right side up. Not every tree survives. We know that. But getting people involved in the mission of planting trees is really one of the most important things we do. But we also do a tremendous amount of work helping to bring resources from our private partners, corporations, or our private donors to those cities, those towns, and those forests of need. We are not the tree planting experts. Like I said earlier, we always want to make sure that we are consulting and supporting the local experts who have brought science to bear, who have the local know-how on where to get the best nursery supply, who know the terrain and the ecology, the drainage systems, everything about how to make sure those trees are going to thrive and survive. And if we can be a part of helping to accelerate their work and amplify their work, that's what we try to do by bringing private and public resources to support those projects, programs in cities and towns, and in critical forest lands, large-scale forest lands around the world.
Right, right. No, that's good. I wanted to provide the opportunity to set the record straight, because that's still something I've been hearing in my surroundings. So like, well talking to Dan, so I'll let him explain it himself.
I appreciate that. And you know, here's the deal. The Arbor Day Foundation, we want to lower the bar of entry for people mm-hmm. to participate in tree planting. You know, not everyone's a scientist. Not everyone is a certified arborist, but gosh darn it, they want to be a part of planting trees. And we want to help them do that by providing them with trees sometimes, helping to point them in the direction of volunteer experiences they might be able to engage in, and resource and information about how to plant, where to plant, how to dig the hole, how much to water, those types of things.
That's the North Star for the Arbor Day Foundation, I would say.
Yeah.
So Dan, you mentioned that you've been with the Arbor Day Foundation 18 years. If you got the opportunity to jump back 18 years, what's something that you might do differently?
Oh boy. You know, I'm really good at repressing any kind of bad experience. It's one of my probably best gifts.
That sounds healthy.
But I'll tell you, I'm honestly not sure what the answer to that is. I mean, I'm sure I've made plenty of mistakes that I'd love to fix for sure, but I'm not sure how big they all are. But one of the things that I would probably do, here's what I'll say. One of the things I've been most excited about in my 18 years at the Arbor Day Foundation is I believe the Arbor Day Foundation is recognized as a good collaborator. I think when our report card comes home, it usually says we play well with others. We respect the leadership of everyone in the forestry community. We know what we know, but we know we don't know a lot of things. And so it's really important that we work with tree care companies, scientists, research experts, those folks actually getting the trees. So collaborating is such a big part of who we are. Partnerships is a big part of who we are. And we're proud of the partners that we've built. What I would say is I wish we'd been better over the years, and we're getting better at it now, of bringing a richer mix of partners to the table. Church groups, ethnic diversity groups, children's groups, just some of the different communities and constituencies who great value from an urban forest and forests period, but maybe don't have it as a priority for them. And I think we could have been better about casting an even broader net of friends and partners and collaborators to make this movement even more fueled right now. So that, I guess that would be my answer. We're proud of the partners we have. We value them and respect them so much. But we are today actively recruiting to have an even deeper pool of partners. I think I wish we had done that 10 years ago.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Well, there's no time like the present, right?
That's right. Yep.
Beautiful.
Better now than never.
Exactly. Exactly. And now is the time for trees.
Indeed.
Hey.
Someone said that one day.
But I do think that's beautiful, because I think a lot of those organizations that you mentioned already have the leadership, the resources, and the capacity in place to actually become stewards for those trees that end up being planted or nurtured or cared for in some way as well. So it's a beautiful to be able to, for lack of a better word, take advantage of that as well.
Yeah. And the reality is we have more technology and more storytelling ability to help some new constituencies recognize how trees and forests are indeed in alignment with their most important issues,
mm-hmm.
health, wellness, crime, property values, you know, the list goes on, and helping to make sure they recognize that it indeed fits into their values and their mission work.
Well, something else that I wanted to ask you is, it's no secret to you and I, and perhaps to a lot of listeners of the show, that the urban forestry world, despite all the attention and now investment that it's getting, is facing a massive labor shortage on all kinds of different levels and scales. For any young people that might be listening, that might be listening to this because they have a vague interest in the field and might be interested in looking to get involved, what would be your piece of advice for young people looking to get involved in a career or a job of some sort in urban forestry?
The professionals I meet in the urban forestry community all around the country and around the world are they're top notch. They're well paid. They're trained. They are in a community of support. They have tremendous flexibility in movement from company to company or career paths. There is an enormous runway ahead of them if they choose to engage in this kind of professional work, from climbing trees to bringing science to bear to coordinating with volunteers and engaging neighborhoods and communities. The list is huge, and it is a rewarding, exciting, but maybe one of the coolest things about it is they get to be a part of positive, inspiring, optimistic work in their communities and towns. Sometimes that means bringing trees down that have failed, but oftentimes it means creating healthier trees by pruning and caring for them, planting them, and nurturing them. And it's an uplifting experience for the profession. And I just would encourage everyone to explore it because there are good paying jobs, there's stability, and it's just a great community to be a part of.
I couldn't agree more. One of my favorite stories about a lot of the hits on a lot of the points that you just mentioned was that I had the opportunity to do a little biking tour with an arborist that had worked in the city of Amsterdam for a long time. And he's like, you know what? I was interviewing him for my book that I'm working on. And I was talking to him about it. He's like, you know what? Let me just take you around to some of the projects that I worked on 20, 30, even 40 years ago. He's like, because I don't take enough. I'm constantly thinking about the next project, right, that I'm working on. And I don't often take enough because he's since moved away from Amsterdam. He's like, I don't actually ever go back to those projects and take a look. Like, gosh, some of them I probably haven't visited in 5, 10, maybe even 15 years. So we had planned this trip. And then last minute, he had a 12-year-old son, has a 12-year-old son. Last minute, he's like, I'm going to bring my son along too. And so there we go, the three of us, me, the arborist, his 12-year-old son. And we have this full afternoon tour of biking around Amsterdam and going around, and he's showing his son and me all of these different projects that he's worked on. And it was so cool because, and it was almost emotional at times because this 12-year-old son is able to see what his dad was working on long before the son was around, right? And you're able to see the literal fruits of your labor in a lot of those ways, and talking a lot about how important the soil was and how that's really been the key reason why a lot of these projects have been so successful. But it's always stayed with me because it's this, as you mentioned, not only is it, you know, you get good pay and good training and good career prospects now, but it's also this opportunity to work on projects that then your children and your grandchildren are going to benefit from. It's there's not a lot of work like that.
That's a great story. And I hope that makes it into your book because it really is a great story and it speaks to legacy. Like not a lot of jobs provide the opportunity to look back at the legacy of your
That's
work.
It.
And it's pretty cool. And it's a great story that you shared. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's it. It's that I didn't have the word for it, but you're right. It's that legacy component. It's about working on something that's so much greater and so much longer lasting than yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk about a job with meaning.
I know it. I have planted trees or been a part of planting trees all around the world, getting my hands dirty. And I keep a list of places I planted. I love to drive back by those places to see them when I can. But you're right, you know, to have a career where you're really transforming a community. You're transforming a community, and it's a really cool legacy to look back on. Yeah.
No, that's beautiful. Well, if that doesn't encourage you to get into urban forestry, I don't know what will. Dan, where is the best place for people to connect with you and the Arbor Day Foundation online?
Well, our website is arborday.org. You can go to our website and get all kinds of information about what to plant, how to plant, learn more about the Arbor Day Foundation. I try to do most of my public communications via Twitter and LinkedIn. My Twitter handle is @DanLambe, DanLambe. The Arbor Day Foundation Twitter handle is @ArborDay. Arbor Day is active on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, all those other sites as well. But anyone who wants to connect with me via Twitter or LinkedIn, I welcome it. And I can't wait to share their stories and help amplify their message as well through whatever channels I have. But LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, Arbor Day, and @DanLambe, that's probably the best places to try and catch me.
And I have to say, since about a year ago, I mean, you guys have been doing content longer than that, but I feel about like a year ago, the Arbor Day Instagram has really just skyrocketed in terms of the quality of the content you guys put out there, videos and all kinds of different stuff. I'm a happy consumer of it myself. So I encourage people to check it out.
I appreciate that. It's a fun platform. You know, there's so much you can do on that platform, and it's so visual, which is exciting. It's
great for storytelling, yeah. Which, as we talked about, is so crucial to getting the message across.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that.
Absolutely. And then the last question that I ask all of my guests who come on the show, and that is, what does the Internet of Nature mean to you?
Well, to me, the Internet of Nature is about the link between how we can activate around some of the most cutting edge technologies and resources to advance nature. And nature has all these connections. And I feel like the technology tools that we have today provide us with unique opportunities to connect communities, connect interested players, to learn about what to plant, where to plant, how to plant, to make us smarter, sharper, more engaged. And we are wowed by some of the new technology opportunities that are coming out there. And it is indeed making us smarter and sharper in how we plant, where we plant, and what we're planting. And it just makes us better. And so that's what it means to me. And I appreciate you helping to spread the word on that.
Happy to. I mean, we've got to. We got no time to waste.
Yeah. And now is the time to be planting trees. It just really is. Yeah. And honestly, it's cool to get to share this conversation with you, because I know you've got an audience of folks who pay attention and are ready to act.
They are. They absolutely are. So here's to you, listeners. Thank you, Dan, for coming on.
Hey, my pleasure. It's great to see you. And congratulations on all your success. And I can't wait to read your book.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Internet of Nature podcast. Want to learn more about the Internet of Nature? Subscribe to my newsletter at nadinachala.com. I'm looking forward to bringing you another great guest next week. As always, remember to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and leave us a review if you learned something new. The best way to support us is to share this episode with a friend or colleague. Season 5 of the Internet of Nature podcast on the future of urban forestry is brought to you by Planet Geo. See you next week.